Speaking on the program at this time is Brother James W. Boyd.
Tonight resumes in the 14th chapter of the book of Luke with verse 15. Luke chapter 14 and verse 15. We're involved in a number of chapters where we are studying teachings by Jesus Christ, specifics of the gospel, certain principles that are there applicable and relevant to us as we ourselves strive to live the Christ-like life. Verse 15 reads, "And when one of them that sat at meat with him heard these things, he said unto him, Blessed is he that shall eat bread in the kingdom of God." Christ just spoken about one making a supper and calling various ones to that supper. This individual, he's not identified, recognized a basic fundamental truth that there's blessing to be obtained to those who are in the kingdom. Those outside the kingdom have not known the blessings that those of us who are privileged to be in this kingdom already enjoy. And we must partake of that spiritual food, which is Jesus Christ, in order to have the blessings of Christ. It's rather elementary. Everybody should seemingly understand it. But it seems to me, at least, that a lot of people want, and sometimes even expect, blessings from God, but they don't want to commit themselves to that relationship where these blessings are. We want God to look upon us with favor, but we don't want ourselves to do those things that bring us into God's favor. I suppose that's a failing and a weakness of humanity, but those who are in the kingdom are those who are blessed. Now this one, having spoken of eating bread in the kingdom, was taken by Christ, with which he teaches a great lesson. I want to read aloud to you through verse 24, and then we want to discuss this tonight. "Then said he unto him, A certain man made a great supper, and bade many. And he sent his servant at supper time to say to them that were bidden, Come, for all things are now ready. And they all with one consent began to make excuse. The first said unto him, I have bought a piece of ground, and I must needs go and see it. I pray thee, have me excused. Another said, I have bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I go to prove them. I pray thee, have me excused. Another said, I have married a wife, and therefore I cannot come. So that servant came and showed his lord these things. And then the master of the house, being angry, said to his servant, Go out quickly into the streets and lanes of the city, and bring in hither the poor and the maimed and the halt and the blind. And the servant said, Lord, it is done as thou hast commanded, and yet there is room. And the Lord said unto the servant, Go out into the highways and hedges and compel them to come in, that my house may be filled. For I say unto you, that none of those men which were bidden shall taste of my supper." There's a word that I want us to dwell on here in verse 18. And that's the word excuse. There were some that were invited. The implication is that they had accepted the invitation, that they had planned or announced, RSVP maybe, I'll be there. But when time came for them to be there, they all began to make excuse. How would you define an excuse? Say, pardon?
Priority?
An excuse is a priority? You're going to have to elaborate a little bit on that for me, Brother Bob. All right. Well, no, it's very difficult, I know, for this group here to be able to define it, because you never do it. Well, what's the laughter about? What is an excuse? Breaking a promise? Well, that's what they did. It's opposite of a reason. All right, we're going to get 2 words to define here. Brother Turner, you had something there, and so did Brother Daniel, wasn't he?
I said a reason.
A reason? Oh, he said it's opposite of a reason. Well, all right. That'll be all right till we settle it peaceably. Here's a person tonight. Ordinarily would be here for worship service. He's got the flu. He's got presidential itis. He's got the flu. He got a reason? That's not an excuse, is it? That's a reason. You see the difference I'm making there? Anybody else got a distinction and a definition between a reason or an excuse or a definition of an excuse? It's something that's fake, she said. I have a little book that has the definition of an excuse, a rationalized lie. That, you know, I find a hard time differing with that. I mean, you sit there and you've wriggled and squirmed and figured this out to your satisfaction, but it's really not the truth. Yeah, well, wriggle out of it. Okay. He kept making excuses until God became angry with him. Now, here's some fellas here that make excuse for not coming to the wedding feast. How did that set with the man who had prepared the feast? Didn't I read a word in there? Angry also? How many times in the Bible do we find God accepting people's excuses for not doing what He has told them or wanted them to do? This may illustrate what an excuse is. There's a fellow one time lived next door to a fellow, and he wanted to cut down a little bush or something in his yard, so he went next door to borrow his fellow's axe. He said, I want to borrow your axe. What for? We'll cut down that bush. No, you can't borrow it. Well, that stunned him a little bit because they'd always been good neighbors and swapped things back and forth. He said, well, what? He said, because I'm going to eat soup with you. He said, you going to do what? He said, I'm going to eat soup with you. Well, you know good and well you don't eat soup with an axe. He said, I know it, but when you don't want to do a thing, one excuse is as good as another. Now, that's truth, isn't it? Now, he's the only one that came close probably having a reason. She just wouldn't let him out of the house. Yeah, well, that may well have been true. I expect a lot of those notes are excuses rather than reasons, too, but that's a technical term used in school, I think, to allow you to get away with whatever it is. If you want to do it real bad, you don't concoct excuses, do you? If you want to do something real bad, you find reasons for doing it. Or if you want to do something real bad and you know you ought not, you'll keep on the way you rationalize around until you finally seared your conscience sufficiently where you can go on and do it anyway. Well, don't leave us standing now, boys. Go ahead. Your wife wants to hear the rest of that story. You know, that fellow probably knew who was going to get married before he accepted the invitation, didn't he?
You had to go to the army anyway, huh?
You should have sent back to the draft board Luke 14:20. A man and wife, and I just can't talk them. Then let Marianne handle it. Yeah. Now, look at these excuses, too. Were they just on the surface? Would they be very legitimate? I bought some ground, and I got to look at it. More than likely, a very discreet man would have looked at his purchase. Yeah, like I heard a preacher say one time, if this is the kind of fellow I'd love to run up against, I know some oceanfront property in Arizona I'd like to sell him. Yeah, if you would buy it without looking at it. And then the other one's excuse was about the oxen was just about as frivolous, but the one who had prepared the supper was intent on others coming. Now, this was really a very strongly worded rebuke to the ones to whom Jesus was teaching at this time, which, go back to verse 1, were the Pharisees. The Pharisees were among those Jewish people who had first opportunity to hear the message of Christ, and the kingdom was offered unto them. John the Baptist came to them. Christ and the apostles first went to them, and they rejected it. And so this was a rebuke of those that were bidden, they would not be allowed to enter into the feast. I think it shows something that we need to remember. We need to be honest. We need to be honest with ourselves and with others. One little book I've got about an excuse, I think it was said by Shakespeare. Talked about a boy that this sort of tore his breeches just a little bit. You'd hardly notice it, but it was a rip. He went home and put a big patch on it. Well, that called more attention to the rip than if he'd done nothing. And an excuse sometimes calls more attention to what a person really is than if you hadn't tried to make those excuses. We need to be honest with God because God knows. And we might soothe our own consciences and we might deceive others, but we're not going to fool God. And there's no use in making excuses about our service to God because He really knows our hearts and our intents and our purposes and our motives. And excuses are just not acceptable. This is certainly taught in that, isn't it? Any other comment on the meaning one? Verse 25, and there went great multitudes with him, and he turned and said unto them, if any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And whosoever doth not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. All right, both of these verses end in the same phrase, he cannot be my disciple. So here are qualifications for discipleship. Now let's look at these two qualifications. First, hate father, mother, wife, children, brothers, sisters, those who are the closest. What about this thing of hating your father and mother, your wife and children? What sort of master is he to cause you to hate those nearest and dearest to you? It's a love less. It's who is first, who's number one in your life. And you know the beautiful thing about putting God first, putting Christ first? You will love the father and mother and children and wife and brothers and sisters and everybody. That's a part of putting the Lord first, is to love others. But you're supposed to put the Lord first. Even himself has to be second. What sort of cross is he talking about here, the second? There is cross. What is what cross? You ever hear people say sometimes when they run into various and sundry difficulties in life, well, that's just my cross to bear. But aren't these a certain peculiar kind of burdens and sufferings? It's those burdens and sufferings, and that's a good definition, that comes because you're a Christian. Persecution, slander, being ostracized, thought bad about, a lot of things like that come, even now, as a result of being a Christian. Now that's bearing the cross that he's talking about here. Because you've got the flu, because you've had a wreck in your car, because your house burned, that's not the kind of cross. That's a burden, all right. But that's not the kind of burden he's talking about here. Those sort of things are common to humanity. But the cross that he's talking about here are those things that come to a person because of his faithfulness in Jesus Christ. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Matthew 5 and verse 11. So that's the kind of cross and the burdens he's talking about here. Alright, but it's as a result of the fact that he has committed to live his life after Christ. But a lot of things you have to endure and suffer because you're Christian. There are places you can't go. There are jobs that you can't hold. You know, I'm down here. Who's up there? And I mean, not way up, and I mean just making that noise. Surely you certainly do. And I'll tell you, when you have to take a stand for things, you sometimes can see how difficult it can be for you. I'm going to count on you all to give me a few seconds notice. It's a little heavier than I am. Anyone else have any comments on this? These two qualifications of discipleship. Now, in verse 28 and 29, for which of you, intending to build a tower, sitteth not down first and counteth the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it? Lest, haply, after he had made the foundation, is not able to finish it, all that behold it begin to mock him, and saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish it. Or, what king, going to make war against another king, sitteth not down first and consulteth whether he is able with 10,000 to meet him that cometh against him with 20,000?
Or else now, brethren, as yet a great way off, he sendeth an embassage and desireth conditions of peace. Well, I think we can see the wisdom of a man getting ready here to embark upon something that's going to be costly to him. He first tries to figure out, now, am I able to do this? Am I willing to undertake what it takes to get this done? We need to count the cost in being a Christian. I really fear sometimes that some of us who are modern-day preachers uphold, and rightly so, the great blessings and promises and joys of being a Christian, and that's part of it, and it's negligent not to emphasize that, but there's a cost involved also. There are responsibilities and duties. There are do's and don'ts in being a Christian. And we need to ask ourselves, well, am I willing to undertake this? It is certainly folly for somebody to embark upon an undertaking and an obligation without having considered what he's doing. Now, sometimes I know people go out here, maybe buy a house, and thinks he can handle it, and circumstances change, and that's different. He counted the cost, he figured he could. Circumstances were different. That's not what he's talking about here. He's talking about a man here who just goes in without proper thought. And we need to give proper thought about what is required of us to be a child of God. Here's a man that's got an army of 10,000. Before he throws that army up against a man 20,000, he better stop and do some thinking. How am I going to handle this? Maybe it would be better to send a representative over here and try to make peace first. That might be the thing to do. Because it would sure be folly to involve yourself in those sort of things without having first considered or counted the cost. There is a cost in being a Christian. There are requirements. Sometimes people get the idea that once you're baptized, it's a downhill slide all the rest of the way. Well, that's not so. It's an uphill pull all the rest of the way. You're just beginning. That's not the end. And we don't do people a favor to without letting them know something of what is required of them if they become a Christian. And we have to make that preparation. We just teach people that, well, there's forgiveness of sins and fellowship with God and there's peace of mind and there's joy. And why, they get the idea that's all there is to it. But there's words, there's worship, there's abstinence. There's responsibilities to be discharged. There's learning, there's growing, there's study, there's faithfulness. If we don't emphasize those points, well, we're not treating people fairly. We're deceiving them. You know, it's not like getting some of this stuff you get in the mail. Here's something free. Boy, I'll tell you, free. Here's something you get free. I'm waiting right now for a free telephone. I sent off for it. It's free. You just sign up, try this thing for 90 days, and if you don't want it, you're obligated to write them back and tell them, no, I've already got my letter written, I'm just waiting for my telephone. I don't even know what it was I'm supposed to want. I just liked the telephone, so they said they'd send it to me. I'll show them to send me something like that. But now, free, and you just keep reading, it's not all that free. It looks good, you're going to get your prize, but there's something else down there, too. And folks, there's something else in being a Christian, too. I think that's the teaching there. Well, boys, let me say something out loud here that's gnawed at me for nearly 40 years since I've been trying to preach. How much do you appeal to emotion? I never have known. I'm not really too good at it, but I don't want to really do it, but still there's a certain emotion involved, and just so is the happy medium. Anybody got any comments on that? There is emotion involved in obeying the gospel, there's no question. Love is an emotion. But to play on emotion to the point that people are not acting out of conviction, you've overused emotion. Now, just where that point is, I haven't always known. It certainly is a time of rejoicing, but that follows obedience, of course. Well, Alexis, you've had a lot of good comments in our class, but you're on a roll tonight. You know that. You've had some excellent things to say tonight. I mean, that's not exactly preacher talk, I guess, to be you're on a roll. But that is so good. That was so fine. That's so well put. You know what I'm reminded of? I built a little shed out there behind my cabin where I've got my printer and in my little press and my computer and so forth. And there's a squirrel. There's something up in that thing. I think he's wearing an entire community. And I put out mothballs and poison pills and everything else. But I believe that squirrel's over here. Squirrels always come when there's nuts, you know, so he's very much at home. But that doesn't say. I hate to distract things, but that worries me. Is that all right? Well, it's in the house, but I can't get to him. He's up in there. He's all up in there. You want to come get rid of him? Well, I hate to be distracted, but man, I don't like that thing squeaking. Yes. Even if it's friends and family. Even friends and family. You know, brethren, there are a lot of false doctrines that are floating around, not only in the world, but among brethren today. Doctrines that brethren used to not hold. But they've adopted them now, and if you check and find, and if you know some of them, and I do, you'll find out that they didn't change because they got a different understanding of Scripture. They changed because circumstances of some of their friends or their family or their children or themselves has been changed. And now they're changing their viewpoint to accommodate what new situations are. Now, that's not putting the Lord first, is it? In a way, he came to bring peace, but another way, he came and it wouldn't bring peace. And we need to teach that to those whom we hope to convert. They need that. It's fair that they understand that. Society, or religious society, generally probably is spending too much time trying to convert God to man instead of converting man to God. That's a world difference. Let's get these last few verses. So likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all that he hath, he cannot be my disciple. That's what he's been teaching. Now he says salt is good, but if the salt has lost its savor, wherewith shall it be seasoned? It is neither fit for the land nor yet for the dunghill, but men cast it out. He that hath ears to hear, let him hear. Now we've got ears, that is, we have understanding capacity, we better to hear and heed. The salt lost its usefulness, it's good for nothing. You just throw it out. Actually, when salt has lost its positive good, it becomes something of negative value. And it's not fit for the land, it's not fit for anything. And certainly that's true of people who lose their worth for the cause of Jesus Christ. And people do lose their worth for the cause of Christ. They don't lose their worth. They're still precious souls, but they lose their worth for the cause of Christ. The Lord still would desire to have them saved, but they've lost what benefit they could have been to that which is righteous, and therefore they're really fit for nothing. Well, next time we'll read of the lost parables. Three parables, all of them having to do with that which is lost but is found, and we'll find out that the things that were lost for different reasons.